love, kindness, human connection. These are some of the things we talk about on the Danny Painter Show. It's a thing. This show is intended for a more mature audience. We might sometimes say bad words.
So, on a Zoom with me, if you are not familiar with the face that is next to me, his name is Mr. Herman Mashaba. He was the Joburg mayor. We all know him. He has been in politics for as long as I can remember. But there is a story that this man told in a recent meeting that I had with him that I had to bring him on the show. And the backstory that you have, Mr. Mashaba, your business life, your life, it's so full, and you've lived. And I can't wait to hear about it. But welcome to my Zoom. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. And it was lovely meeting you a few weeks ago. It was, people like yourselves and that community really inspired me. People to really come out on that cold Saturday. You remember it was cold. And it really gave me the inspiration and hope that South Africans have not given up on our country, because one of my biggest fears as a South African is South Africans giving up on our country, you know, thinking that the politicians are a solution. That is why we ended up with more people not going out to exercise that democratic right to remove this criminal enterprise called ANC. Because if you can imagine, the 18.6 million people, if they had gone out to vote, would not really be sitting with this criminal government that is in power today.
So we're going to talk about this, because I know a lot of elder millennials have not registered and have never voted. But we will talk about this, because I know this, that you're very passionate about it. But before we get into that, I want to know about you, because you weren't always in politics. You don't come from a very affluent background. You have really worked. You're a self-made man. Where did you come from? Who is Herman Mashaba back then?
Well, Herman... Now, and I'll take it back to 26th of August, 1959.
Wow.
So just last week, I turned 62. So I'm not a young man. I'm probably the same age as your dad or something.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm not a young man, 62 years. But the thing is, what's interesting about the 62 years is that I vividly remember when I was 22 years old getting married, because I mean, in a few months' time I'll be celebrating 40 years of my marriage. And honestly, the other day I was 22 years young man. I was born and raised in a small village called Haramuti next in Amanskraal. I don't know if people know Babelech industrial area, but obviously I was born before the establishment of that industrial area, in a village with no water, no running, no electricity, no water. Those things were totally foreign to me. And when I woke up to this world, when you start seeing yourself as a human being, you're what, 5, 6? And then all of a sudden, I'm in a child-headed household with my sister in charge, the sister who's 13 years my senior, and two other sisters. Where's my mother and father? I'm told your father died when you were 2 years old. And then where's my mother? Your mother is a domestic worker working in Johannesburg. Living in families' homes, so we, you know, every like 2 years, move from one house to the other, because my father unfortunately died before building my mother a house. I don't know, for whatever reason, my father kept making babies but not focus on building my mother a house.
So. Sounds like a South African man to me, Mr. Mashaba. I hate to say that.
So, you know, most part of my life, of my youth, actually brought up moving from one house to the other, depending on the availability of one of the family members. Went to school in that village. I started school in 1966, Sub A. You know, Sub A those days in a church.
Wow.
Yeah, our, you know, aliens are B. We used to go in churches in the in that community. So and then you only because the primary school was a small distance place. It only accommodated the pupils from standard one up to standard six, and then from one up to matric. I went to Temba, which is a township on the other side of the river. That's where Ratshepo High School. That's where I did my high school studies from Form 1 in 1974 until I completed my matric in 1978. 1979, went to University of the North Tafelo. Can imagine going all the way to Petersburg and so forth, using the train those days. Those days, at least the trains were still functional. You know, people don't understand. In fact, more especially my kids, when I tell them this, they think I'm crazy because, yeah. You know, I took them to school, everything, do it there for them, including my daughter who studied in the States. We take her to go and register. You know, for me, from Form 1, I went to register myself.
Wow.
I can't remember. I don't know who took me to Sub A. Perhaps my daughter was 6 years of age, so I don't know who took me to start Sub A. But obviously from Form 1, which was in Temba, where you used to pass, I went to register myself. I went to register myself at the university. First time to go to Petersburg, using my own money. And not that my mother was seriously responsible, I mean, she did not really have the resources. You know, I remember taking a train from Amanskral station, leaving Amanskral at 10 to 10 at night. You travel throughout the night, you arrive in Petersburg at 5 in the morning. You wait, and then I was told, then you wait for buses to go to Moria, coming at 9. You take a bus to Teflop, then you get off, walk to university 20 minutes or to the university, register, and then go back, wait for the bus, back to Petersburg station, take a night train, arrive back in Amanskral the following morning. So you can imagine doing all this, and then okay, got registered, went to university. Second year of my studies, one morning the university surrounded by the army, we were given 6 hours to leave. And that for me was the defining moment of my life because my grandfather and my that really made it clear to me that the only way I'm going to liberate myself and my family and my mother. You know, I was, as much as we never really had our physical home, but we had a family structure, my mother and my sisters. Really, I really feel fortunate that I was brought up in a normal family, loving family. As much as we did not really have the physical resources, but there was love, there was unity, you know. And I've always known that the only way I'm going to liberate myself was through education. And all of a sudden, apartheid government messed up this in the second year of my studies, and I wanted to leave the country. Young black man, very angry. Wow. I said, no, I must go to Zambia. Let me get the Russians also to go and train me how to use an AK-47, come back and cause havoc in the country. But you know what? As a God-fearing and loving person, God has always honestly changed my life. Because you'll see as we talk how my life has always taken different turns. Because I wanted to study, and the apartheid government made it impossible for me to complete my university studies. Then I ended up working for the 30 months in my life, two companies. I worked for SPAR as a dispatch clerk in the warehouse for 7 months, and I worked for Motani Industries for 23 months. And when I was in Motani, that's when I turned 22. And I said to Herman, you are getting old. You are losing, you are missing out on time. You've got to do something. You've got to succeed. And you're not going to follow the same pattern as everybody else. Your grandfather said you've got to succeed. And now it's no longer possible for you to go and study. Mm. You've got to go into business. And I realized I must go into business. But now the law says I can't go into business.
Yeah.
And that's when I then said, no, always. You know what? I'm not going to let other people determine my life to that level. I said, no, I'm going to go into business anyway. And you can imagine now you've got the laws that prevents you from going to business. I don't come from a business that background. Yeah, but saved. While I was working, I saved. And I decided I was going to become a commission sales rep. I'm going to become my own boss in life. I'm not going to let someone else control my life. So I started saving to buy the car. But as soon as I had enough money to buy the car, I decided, let me stabilize my life. I must save myself from myself. Because saving myself from myself, I grew up being a very naughty boy. I grew up without parents. There's a reason I took a decision to get married and really propose to my wife, who in few months' time will be celebrating for 8 years of our marriage.
Yeah.
And she was 20, I was 22. We got married 2 years, 2 months later, bought a car 2 months later, resigned. Everything else is history.
Wow. You really don't do anything by half measures, hey? Like nothing. It's full in, all the, like, it's all in or nothing with you, I feel like. And I feel like you've carried this through your whole life.
You know what, my grandfather, on the day I was born, I can get you a copy of my book called Black Like You. It's an autobiography I wrote with Isabella Morris. That book captures a little bit of my life. And 2-3 years later, I wrote another book called Capitalist Crusader, because I share with South Africans how I've used the capitalist system to give me the freedom I'm enjoying today. And there's a big project, the bigger project that has now gone deep into research. So there'll be a big project, hopefully in a year, 18 months time, that is going to really tell the story of this man, and including the role that my grandfather played. Because my grandfather, on the day I was born, I don't know how come he happened to have been home, because my grandfather was a security guard working as for the Harankua municipality, at the gate of the municipality, the one letting people in and out.
Yeah.
We used to call them Machingilani. I don't know if you would know. So security guard. So, and I don't think my grandfather had been in school, but on the day I was born, he happened to have been home, I believe. And on that particular day, 26th of August 1959, the entire village knew that Hyman was born. He called me Hyman and informed everyone, I believe, went from house to house to tell everyone about the birth of this boy. So I grew up with this feeling that my grandfather was just too much on me.
Yeah.
So sometimes I used to feel embarrassed, because that's why later on in my life I changed this name. As much as even Herman wasn't my official name in the papers. But the entire community, if you go to Haramuzi today, people call me Hyman. And it's not my official name. But I then decided, as I was growing, I think when I was 14, 15, I changed it from Hyman to Herman. And Herman, this was easier, because this Hyman was just too overwhelming on me, because I knew what it actually meant, because my grandfather told the entire community that this is one man who's going to change the world. Honestly, that's a
he was not wrong. He was right. Look what you've done for the world. You have changed the world, and you are still busy changing the world. Even though you call yourself old, you're not old, because my mother is the same age as you, and if we call her old, she will come for us. You are not old, you are young. But he was right. You have been this person. And I was sitting here listening to you, and I was thinking, I wonder if you realize that you are Herman Mashaba. Like, we all talk about you, and you are this amazing human being, and everyone wants a piece of you. Do you ever sit back and go, I'm that person that everyone's talking about. Do you ever have those moments?
Yeah, well, you know what, Elliot, 5 minutes before I linked in with you, someone sent me a clip of an Uber driver. Yes, last night, one of my friends used an Uber and recorded the discussion with this Uber driver. It's interesting, if you get an opportunity, go into my Twitter account, how this guy from Uber... it's talking about me. He doesn't know me. He knows the name, but he's talking about the 3 years of my mayoralty on the impact that I made them on South Africans, that I gave them hope of taking back this country from this criminal syndicates. And these are some of the things that people don't realize. There's absolutely nothing difficult. When I started business as a trader, discovered an opportunity in 1983, selling products from the boot of my car. You know, you can imagine in 1983, when I discovered cosmetics industry opportunity, working for a company in Malvern East on a commission basis, and I sold for them for 19 months. In the 19 months, I was their top salesman. And then felt, you know what? I felt vulnerable at the time. I mean, earning 3,500 to 4,000 rands a month was a lot of money. I mean, those days I was the top salesman for this company in just 19 months. But I still felt vulnerable. I said, Herman, you know, when, like I said earlier on, when my grandfather was putting all these demands on me as I was growing up, I used to feel he was being unfair to me, you know. But as I'm growing up, his wisdom keeps coming back to me every single day. And he said, you know, you're vulnerable because this man can one day just decide to get rid of you as a salesman. And all like just like that. He says, no, it's one thing my grandfather taught me, to always make sure that I'm in charge of my own life. I must never let my life be controlled by someone else. That's when I felt vulnerable. I said, yes, I'm making good money. My life was changing positively, but I was not in charge. And I said, how do I get in charge? I said, I must make these products myself, because the black women out there are ready to be pimped. It's an industry that's going to be there forever.
Yeah.
And then, but I did not have the technical know-how. I was a trader. You know, can imagine now, you can ask your mom, 1984, to approach a white person, Afrikaner for that matter, to say, can we go into business? I said to Johan Krill, Johan Krill was the production manager for this company. I approached him to say, Johan, you can make this stuff, you know, I can sell it. Johan was earning 1,600 as a white person those days, which was a lot of money for them. And I was earning more than double on commission basis. So I said, Johan, you can make this stuff. Black people are ready to be pimped. Let's go and make money for ourselves. And the thing is, you know what? Approaching and having a discussion between black and white in 1984, like that would be tantamount to treason.
Yes.
I ran the risk of, let's say if Johan wasn't interested and reported me to the owner. You know, what are the consequences? But I'm one person always looking at the positive side of life. The thing is that my sense is that I said, if I don't try, if I don't really make an attempt, my life will remain the same and go worse. That's why I'm always proactive. I said, I've felt myself, you know what, I've got absolutely nothing to lose. Let me try this guy. I looked at the positive side of it and approached to Johan Grill, and Johan, he had an opportunity. Johan was ready. Now, can imagine if I was someone who feared to take a risk. I would not have approached him being scared that Johan, as a white person, Afrikaner, might really be against me and report me to the owners. But I looked at the positive life, and Johan accepted that. He says, but Herman, I don't have the money. I said, leave that to me. Approached a prominent business guy in Harangu, in Mabopane, Walter Dube. We approached him to say, Mr. Dube, black women are ready to be pimped. I showed him how I was doing all over the country. I knew salons, I knew people in the industry. I said, I've got this white guy, fantastic guy. This is the man who can make the products. can you guys give us the funding? We'll print money. In fact, I remember saying to I remember saying to Mr. Duke, I said, I didn't know him, introduced him by his wife, who had a salon. Arthur Dube had a small shopping center, and his wife had a salon in there. So requested the wife to introduce us to Arthur. When I approached him, I said, Mr. Dube, we found a legal machine to print money.
You know, it's incredible for me that you've had this much success and you're still so incredibly humble. You talk about this company as if it's just another company. You started one of the biggest cosmetics companies in the world, I would argue, and you sit here and you tell it like it's just a thing. And you know what the most beautiful thing about this is that your fearlessness, but also your kindness to other people, because they would never have said yes if you weren't a good, authentic human. And I think that speaks so much into what we as millennials need to understand, is that it's all about relationships at the end of the day. Because you would never have been able to approach Johan or Mr. Dube or any of them had you not had that relationship and worked on that relationship over the months or the years that you'd known them, or known his wife, who said nice things about you. So it's always how you treat the last person that you see that could be the deciding factor in your future. And it's incredible to hear it like that.
Well, I think, you know, one of the lessons from my father, and in fact, I said this on Sunday during the 1 year celebration of Action SA. We turned one as a political party. And I said, my grandfather taught me one thing. He says, listen to people, but ultimately judge them, not what they say, what they do. And it says, if someone double crosses you, someone says something to you and they're going to do something different, don't give them a second chance. And please, you don't do this to the next person. If this is what I'm asking you to do, that means you cannot do this to the next person.
Yeah.
That is why people have always regarded, I mean, if you can talk to anyone I grew up with, including my other sister come after, Connie. My wife is Connie, and my sister is also Connie, the one I come after. We grew up together. We loved, dearly loved each other, but used to beat me up when sometimes when we differed on issues. Used to think that I'm a stubborn person.
Okay, so.
And I think if people have grown up and they take me to be a stubborn person because I'm not the kind of person that would lie to someone else. It's in my nature, it's in my DNA. And I will not take kindly to anyone who lies to me. I don't give you, you know, people think I'm brutal. I've been an employer, I've been whatever, ran the city of Johannesburg. I used to call them snakes, these ANC cadres. You know, and I'll tell them about what I do with snakes. I said I was born and raised in a village. In a village, when we see a snake, when people kill it, they don't just kill it, they burn it. Yeah. Because this is the snake will wake up. So I used to give them an example, this ANC cadres who were doing everything possible to sabotage me. I said, guys, I catch you trying to double cross me or sabotage me. I don't just kill you, I burn you. Because I don't want the risk of, I can't take a chance of you waking up.
Yeah.
And that's my life. And because I know I won't do it to the next person, and I don't want someone to do it to me as well. And that's what my father taught me. I'll never take advantage of the next person, someone who's vulnerable, to say to you, here it's 1 + 1 = 2. Knowing that you are vulnerable, you'll believe me. In the meantime, I want 3. I will never take advantage. I confront issues directly. If you don't like it, that's fine with me. But I will never really mislead anyone. But please don't mislead me as well. That's when then you'll see my brutality.
How did you You spoke about Action SA. So you have this business, you've created this incredible company that's gone massive, huge, huge, huge. You must be living what we as millennials like to say your best life. The cars, the money, the lifestyle. And then you decide politics. Of all the things you could have chosen, Mr. Mashaba, why and how did you land up in politics?
I think, you know, for me, honestly and truly, I believe I've always been a politically conscious person, but I never thought I would participate directly in politics. Even when I left university angry, wanting to go for military training, was to try and find a solution to this apartheid government, because I felt the only way we can collapse this government is through violent means, because we tried everything possible through negotiation, but it wasn't really working. I'm a results-driven kind of person, you know. So when I left university, I wanted to go and get the training and come back. I'll probably have been arrested and killed by the apartheid government, because I was not going to be prepared to stay behind like most ANC people did. And fortunately enough, because I'm a God-loving and fearing person, God has always determined my destiny. Because to leave the country those days, you needed to have very good contacts to get you out of the country. God said, no, you're not going to leave. And I look at it in reflection. You can imagine if I had contact with ANC people in exile, Jacob Zumas, I'll probably be either a very corrupt minister, because that's what they taught them, the way it looks like they were teaching them. Or they would have killed me, because they killed a lot of the youth who left in 1976 and after, who were questioning what they were doing. So God decided, no, you can't. That's how I got involved in business. And I was lucky. I succeeded with my wife and my partners. And then voted for Nelson Mandela in 1999, voted for Thabo Mbeki in 1999. But then, during second year of Thabo Mbeki, that's when I started realizing, but no, this ANC is not really what I grew up thinking that way. And looking at here's a country with an infrastructure backlog. The first thing that they invest in is procurement, and you know what happens with the arms deal. While we're busy with the arms deal, here are the people who are there to support Robert Mugabe. You know, the vicious evil men called Robert Mugabe and ZANU-PF, they start supporting such people, and I said, no man, something is not wrong. Righty. One thing for sure is that, you know, my family and I, in from the 90s, we grew our business by making sure that we get involved in community projects. Mm-hmm. The little money that we made, we never left the people around. Unlike clever blacks, unlike the ANC, that, you know, I don't know how many black youth we took to university today who are doctors, lawyers, everything. We had a department that we used to process applications every year, put aside the millions to take the people to schools. We used to assist in whatever way that we could. So we've always been a socially conscious that family. Yeah. And obviously, well, after realizing that the ANC is not what I was looking for, or what I thought they were, that's when I started voting for the DA, because I thought I shared the same values with them, including actually when Jacob Zuma was elected for the second time in 2014, I decided to take a conscious decision to join the DA, to take a membership of a political party for the first time in my life.
Wow.
I took the DA membership and made noise about it. I was all over the papers, the prominent black businessman taking membership of the DA. And why I did that, I wanted to send a message to the youth, particularly black youth, to say, please, guys, let's not vote for political parties because people look like us. Let's vote for political parties for what they stand for. This ANC doesn't stand for our values as South Africans. They stand for something else. They stand for corruption and thuggery. So you can't vote for those people. There's no Nelson Mandela any longer. We're a criminal organization. The effect, if you can do your stay, when you get a chance, go into YouTube, look at the video I did. It's called Why I Joined DA. I did a 3 minutes video. And with no intention of ever going into business, was just to save South Africa so that I knew the youth are the ones who are going to save this country.
Yeah.
And late 2015, when the DA first approached me to be the mayoral candidate for Joburg, I thought, my goodness, what the hell is this now? You know, what am I going to do with direct politics? I mean, a capitalist, just a few years earlier, wrote a book called Capitalist Crusade. I said, what does a capitalist like myself have to do with direct politics? But then the firing of Nene, the late 2015, that's when I said, no. I said to my family, you know what? We've got two options. It's either you allow me to use my privilege and our family's privilege that I enter the political field, or we leave this country.
Wow.
And luckily my family said, no, we like the first option. We love this country. And everything else is history. Then 2016, started campaigning as a mayoral candidate. Had no knowledge whatsoever of what I was doing. But I knew what I was doing. That to other people, more especially the media, I was the biggest joke. Because they thought, what the hell is this man doing? And you ended up with a DA massive growth. We had 38%. I was going for 50 plus one. I want, you know, my grandfather told me everything that I do, I must do to win. Like right now with S-Action SA, I'm not doing this job to be in opposition. No way, I'll be wasting my time. I'm in this job to take over government. And change the lives of South Africans, because I can't change the lives of South Africans as an opposition. I'm not looking for a job. The job as a councillor, it does not even won't last me a day. I mean, I'm not looking for a job or to be a councillor. I want to really be in government so that I can put together a team of committed, capable South Africans of all colors, creed, to serve the nation and make sure that we can deal with this inequality, to deal with this racial division that ANC has created. Are you aware we are more divided today than we were before 1994? We are more unequal today than we were in 1994. I mean, these are things that are unacceptable. You can imagine the HFL vote at the time, ANC did a better job than HFL vote. In all indices, be education, with a meta capital, with a red capital. No, man, you know, it honestly makes me angry. People sometimes don't understand why I appear most of the time angry, and I am angry, honestly, and I'm not prepared to hide it. I'm not going to play a political game that things are normal. Things are very, very far from being normal. Just let me give you one example of what sometimes I'm angry. You heard last week, 23,000 children of the age of 10 to 14, yes, left school in Gauteng alone because of pregnancy.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you not get angry? And then this government, for them, though, it's normal. We should really be hunting down those men who raped these children.
Yeah.
These are not women. These are children. How can you expect the 12-year-old? It's statutory rape. You can't tell me a 10-year-old child fell in love. No. I mean, these are things that, you know, honestly, a normal human being with a conscience and God-fearing will get angry. It's not something to really laugh about. We're known as a country to be the capital, rape capital of the world. Can imagine be my daughter, my wife, or my neighbor gets raped. I mean, every time a woman gets raped in this country, I feel, you know what, as if I have my chance, you'll never get a second chance.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. That's why I'm a strong believer in the death penalty for rape and the first degree murder. People who killed this whistleblower in Johannesburg. I can tell you, if I have my way through the constitution, I'll put them away. I'll never give them a second chance to go and murder someone else. I'll never give a man to go and rape another woman. And I'm not prepared to take the nonsense of people who are telling me that the death penalty is not a deterrent. Tell me, if someone rapes you today, they go to jail and then 2 years later they come back and rape again.
Absolutely.
And you tell me if I had put this man to bed, they would not have given a chance to rape again. So I don't understand what scientific basis that they run that the death penalty is not a deterrent. Because if someone planned to come and murder someone like they did with this whistleblower and the Houghton Health Department, if we put those people away, they'll never get a chance to kill again.
Yeah.
This is first degree murder. But obviously, I believe in the rule of law. I can tell you, if one day Action SA will be given the mandate to can change to this constitution, the death penalty will be one of the issues that I bring back. So that people must understand, you kill someone, you plan to kill someone, you go and rape the woman and destroy their lives, under Herman Mashaba, you'll not get a second chance to rape again.
You know, Mr. Mashaba, yesterday, we recently celebrated Women's Month, and yesterday I was reading through some articles that people had sent me to celebrate the last day of Women's Month. And one of the Instagram pages that I followed put out a question. If men had curfew for the 31st of September, 31st of August, for the whole day, what would you do as a woman? And the answers absolutely shocked me, because I don't think we as women in this country understand the way that we live, right? We're living in almost like a war zone. I'd compare it to that, because the world
worse than a war zone. No, countries, you know, the murders committed in this country, countries at war, don't roughly 60 people get murdered every day in this country.
Day. Yeah.
Countries at war don't go through this.
So these women were saying things that even I myself would love to do. One woman said, I'd like to go to the garage and buy an ice cream and go sit on the beach. Another woman said, I'd like to go to the mall and not carry my keys in my hand. Another woman said, I'd like to go have coffee by myself in a restaurant. And these are human rights. These are freedoms that in this country, women feel like they don't have. And you highlighting this for me and that yesterday, I feel like we need to, it has to be an education to men. Because men rape women. Women don't go out to be raped. As Action SA and as Herman Mashaba, other than obviously massive penalties for people that do it, what is the game plan for changing the education or the way that men think about women and see women, maybe?
Well, for as long as we are prepared to be governed by this evil criminal organization called the ANC, things can only get worse. I think, honestly, I think let's not play political games. I think let's face the elephant in the room. The elephant in the room is the ANC, who have allowed this. During the dark days of this country's history, my wife and I will go and party, honestly, 3-4 kilometers away from home, where after the party, 1 o'clock at night, the two of us will walk home. Honestly,
I've never
times.
Done that in my life. Wow.
Because we had no cars, and we, honestly, to ask anyone of my age how will walk. I walk with my wife can tell you. We will walk from a party after having a party 3-4 kilometers away from home. Today, in this country, I don't really feel safe coming from a party in my car. I don't feel safe.
No.
In my car. No. So I think we have to really deal with this ANC matter. We need to invest in the education. We need to get the private sector to employ our people, because when people are employed, they've got education, they're employed, they've got the dignity. Now, what has ANC done? They destroyed the dignity of a black person. They created this stereotype and this narrative to black people that black people are victims, they are slaves, that without ANC, they can't think for themselves, they can't do anything for themselves. They've opened our borders for international drug syndicates, bringing very dangerous drugs to destroy them. So you find now, you're going to meet lots of communities, all these murderers and rapists, they're just lying. They don't have any meaning in life. They don't feel anything. They don't have the conscience any longer. So they don't fear God. I went, when I grew up, every morning when we go to school, before we start school, we'll go to assembly and pray. Every Sunday, we'll go to church. ANC is against all this. At our schools, we had lots of the sporting, be football or basketball. We had choirs. You know, we had we used to be taught agriculture and so forth. Those things are today. 80% of public schools in the black communities are dysfunctional. 75% of black youth in this country, just last week, SSA, 74% of black youth in this country are unemployed.
It's unacceptable.
45% of South Africans are unemployed. When I grew up, you know, when I grew up in this country before apartheid, people who did not work were those who did not want to work. People had the dignity of work, because work is not just about obviously being paid every month. It's the dignity. That's why I respected my mother. That's why I respected my sisters, because they'll wake up every Monday morning, go after obviously when they started working, they go to work Friday, the little that they've earned, you know. That's why I respected them. Today, went to a lot of the township in this RDP houses, poorly built RDP houses that collapses in 6 months. Parents, there are kids today who are 27 years old, like the New South Africa. They've never seen any of their parents waking up to go to work. Now tell me, what kind of society? What kind of society are you creating? That is why, children will fall pregnant at the age of 10 and show no respect for their parents, because when the parents question them, says, no, but this is not your house. You've never provided for me. Mm. Mm. And this is the kind of South Africa that the ANC wants to create. They're determined to create it. It's not an incident.
You have a massive, massive job ahead of you, Mr. Mashaba. And I've got to ask you, how do you not take this home with you? Because I think I would find it, any human must find it very difficult to go home and just be home with your family.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. From the time when I worked for the city of Johannesburg, when I took over as the mayor, running a seven-way multi-party coalition with the DA, the most difficult partner, because they did not believe in my proper policies. The DA felt that these people who are unemployed, who did not vote for them, why must we provide services to them? And I was used to, I couldn't believe. And every time when I go into their meetings with the leadership of the DA, I'll ask for protection to say, I've got a problem with some of my caucus members. What kind of people are these? They're insulting me. And unfortunately, actually, the DA decided to, in fact, connive with the ANC to remove me, because they thought this is the man who doesn't listen. We are telling him to go and cut grass in Sandton and Morningside. He wants to give toilets to people who don't pay taxes. That's a DA for you. And when I realized this, and I said, I'm out of here. When they started now talking to the ANC to remove me, fortunate enough, I wasn't born yesterday. When I learned of the secret meetings between the DA and the ANC to remove me, that's when I said, no, I'm working with dangerous people. And my grandfather's wisdom came back and says, Herman, when you deal with a snake, don't give it a second chance. That's why I left, and it was a very painful, difficult decision to leave before completing my term. And how do I explain it to South Africans and people of Johannesburg as to why I'm leaving? Some people living up to today, they don't believe me because DA tells them something else. But fortunately, a white chief of staff, Michael Bowman, has written a book, Accidental Mayor, captured everything there. And up to now, the DA has never contested what Michael has written. About how DA, actually, I think for me, DA in terms of race relations, for me, they're the same as the EFF in terms of polarization of our nation, which is very, very dangerous. Because for you as a white person, that person in living in Plastic View, you remember when I told you about that community where people live without toilets? Yes. And then the DA says, no, they are not our constituents. And then, so now what happens? People are then going to say, then you're giving the ammunition to the ANC, yes, and the EFF to say, no, you know why you live in plastic shacks? It's because of this white, they don't want to share. And I'm telling you, it's not a true reflection, because when I was the mayor of the city of Johannesburg, residents of Sandton, of whatever, everywhere, every time I'll have these complaints from the DA, I'll call a public meeting of just a strictly white people, full, all, and I'll tell them about my plans for the city and how we've got to give dignity to poor people. I'll get a standing ovation. And I used to, and then I'll go back to the DA and say, tell me, who do you represent? Because here the people are saying, Masheba, please go and give our fellow residents the dignity.
Mr. Mashaba, we're running out of time, and I have a big question, but you're not allowed to shout at me for this, what I'm about to say. You're not allowed to shout at me because my mother shouted at me. I am one of the elder millennial generation that have never voted in my entire life. Now, I know what you can say already. Sandy has shouted at me already. But I feel like, speaking on behalf of us elder millennials, and I don't speak for all of us, but my friend group, right, we don't feel like our vote counts, because every election comes and every election goes and the same party is in power and the same party is in power. And there is this narrative that they are never going to leave, that it's going to take 20 years, 10 years for them to leave. And what does one vote count anyway? Like, what difference does it make? So I am admitting to you that I haven't. I did tell you that I did make you a promise that I would this time. So I am going to vote and register. And I won't tell you where my vote's going because I'm not allowed to. But I feel like you know. But does my vote count? What is your message to people like me who have never? Why should we? Why does it matter?
Okay. You know what you just told me and what you did? You put this evil criminal organization called the ANC into power. You're refusing or abdicating your responsibility, your constitutional responsibility. You actually voted for the ANC. Let me tell you why. We've got 36 million eligible voters in this country.
Yeah.
In 2019, 17.6 million people went to vote. Of the 17.6 million people who voted, only 10 million voted for the ANC from 12 million.
Okay.
Okay, so, and the other the 7.3 went to all the other parties, the DA and others. The 18.3 million people, including you, your votes went to the ANC.
The ANC is in power. Voting.
The ANC is in power because of someone like you. And now the challenge that you and I have got is to say, how do we get the millennium like you to realize that you are the future of your country? Because to get to 18.3 million, it's not 18.3 million, it's one vote.
Okay.
One vote will get to 18 million. So you can imagine if half of those people had voted, what would have happened? Because if half of the people had voted, we would not be having ANC into power today.
Really? Really, really, no. Really?
No, even 25% of the 18.3 million, if they had voted, well, ANC would be under 50%. ANC would be out of government in Gauteng. So you actually directly, not indirectly, you directly voted for the ANC. Those who are of a voting age who did not vote, voted for the ANC. The numbers are there. Not for me, please, they are on IEC website. Because if you don't really vote, majority party takes the votes of all those who did not vote. So for you not to have voted, basically, you are responsible to really putting your life, my life, into a risk, because we've got a government that can get people to murder us. You can get a government that would allow women to be raped and to continue with that thuggery. So I think I would really appeal to you to use your influence to talk to everyone around you, get them to understand the power of voting. Look at the United States. Last year, when Biden was voted into power, for they had all-time record voting.
Yes.
You know what? Why? You know why? Because Americans were not happy the last 4 years of with Trump.
Trump.
They had,
yes.
They had issues. But what they did, the country, which is there, the most educated, the wealthiest nation by far and everything. What they do when they have problems like this, they don't leave their future to politicians. They go out there and decide who governs them. A country like South Africa, with all our problems I've indicated to you, people say, no, let ANC continue voting. Because for you not to exercise your democratic right, you are saying, no, let these criminals continue governing us. That's a fact.
I've never heard it that way, and you have made more sense to me in the last minute that you've spoken than anyone has. Thank you, Mr. Mashaba. I will be voting. I will. I told you I'll be voting.
No. And let me tell you something, and because that's something that the ANC used their propaganda, they learned from the Soviet Union, to tell you that your vote is a secret. Why should your vote become a secret? Why should your vote become a secret? It is to silence you, is to really make you not important, is to not hold politicians accountable. When your vote is an open thing, that's when politicians will respect you, because they know, Herman Mashaba, I won't vote for you because of the following. I'll vote for so-and-so for the following reason. But whoever I vote for, I will hold accountable. In developed economies, people don't say your vote. So your votes are not a secret. Go to England, go to the United States. I've got friends for over many years in the United States, whatever. Their votes are not a secret. I know I've got family. Openly, they are Democrats.
Yes.
They are Republicans.
Yes.
And they hold the politicians accountable.
Yes.
If they don't deliver, they know we're going to remove you. But what happens is, you're now a victim of Soviet Union type propaganda to say your vote is a secret. No, your vote should not be. You must be a proud voter of a particular party. But that party should not think that they've got a blank check. You'll hold them accountable. The day when you don't want to see them any longer, you chase them out of your house, like people of Soweto are doing today. The majority of people in Soweto today, they don't allow ANC in their homes. They fail them. Says, no, they get out of my yard. I don't want to really see you. Because you deceived them, you misled us, you abused us for a long time. And I'm on a mission to teach South Africans that their vote should not really be a secret. I'm not saying you vote for action. You vote for a party of your choice. But tell them, if I vote for you, this is what I expect from you. If not, you must know, the next time around, you won't get my vote. Once you can reach that stage, of development as a society, this country will be the, one of the greatest countries in the world.
Mr. Mashaba, I want to talk to you for the next hour, but you have a lot of work to do. You have a lot of work ahead of you. Tell me something. If someone watching this wants to find out more about you, wants to read your book, wants to find out about Action SA, where is there one place that they can go to get all of this information?
Yes, I think if you look at our website, I think Action SA website, actionsa.org.za, I think on a daily basis, I communicate with South Africans, give them updates of what we all about, issues that we are tackling, which we are tackling in this country, including the story of my life. If you want the story of my life, there's so much on our website and YouTube and so forth. So there's so much. I've got now 3 books, one written by Michael Buhrmann, the accidental mayor. I wrote my autobiography called Black Like You that gives you an insight into my life. I wrote a book called Capitalist Crusader. You can buy this online. There's a big book that's coming out later next year that is going to be even bigger, because then I've got a team of professional researchers and so forth to actually capture this history of my life and the way it is going.
You are an inspiration. I don't know where you get all of this time from, but Mr. Mashaba, inspiration. Please will you leave us with some Mashaba wisdoms that we can take with us into the next couple of days?
Fellow South Africans, so we are facing one of the most defining elections in a few weeks' time or in a few months' time. Either we're going to have it on the 27th of October, or they might change them unconstitutionally to have them early next year. These are the most important elections since 1994. If we fail to remove the ANC out of power, then please accept the consequences of South Africa being one day declared a failed state.
Remember, you can catch the full video on xotv.me, and you can meet us in kind of real life. Thanks to DJ Chalk for the music. You can catch him at www.chalksprosound.co.za. New episodes on Jackpod and XOTV every Monday. Love you.